good day or good evening, dear friends and listeners. You are, of course, listening to Red Eyes Radio. I'm Henrik Palmgren from Sweden, and we are glad to have you with us as we navigate the ocean of information uncertainty. There is indeed a nest of artificial constructs out there, and there is also a lot of interesting research and work, and we discuss and question many of the topics that we highlight and try to learn as much as we can and help to inform you, our listeners, along the way as we do so. If you go to redicecreations.com, we have much more for you, much more to learn there. Sophia Smallstorm is back with us, returning after just a few weeks to discuss her work on the tie-in between chemtrails and synthetic biology. Sophia is known for her research on 9/11, which culminated in the documentary 9/11 Mysteries. We are going to talk about some of the concepts behind the geoengineering agenda and weather modification, and also explore how this connects with Morgellons disease, transhumanism, and the bigger buried agenda behind robotics, genetics, nanotechnology, and artificial intelligence. Welcome back again, Sophia. Nice to have you back so soon. Thank you for taking the time talking with us. Always lovely to have you on, so thank you for being here.
Oh, well, I have to thank you, Henrik. I love listening to your show, and now I'm actually being part of it as a guest, so that's a big honor.
Excellent. Thank you. I recently watched your chemtrails and pseudolife presentations that was given, well, the first one anyway, was given a few years ago now, back in 2011 at the Conspiracy Con. And we kind of touched base a little bit on this basic concept in, you know, the last time you were with us talking about Sandy Hook and just where kind of the bigger picture of where this is going. But I just was fascinated about this concept and about this idea. I wanted to bring you back again and talk more about this and all the other new tangents that have unfolded since that time. But just give us an outline a little bit, if you can, of how this transgressed for you, Sophia, in terms of, I mean, you've always looked at chemtrails or for a long time, many, many years, I think, in that particular arena. And then this kind of started to blossom into this completely different field, basically, where you started to bring in all these different components of Morgellons, of things that's happening in our environment, to the technological aspect, transhumanism, nanotechnology, all of that. How did you piece this together?
Well, Henrik, it was the year I met you, so you must have had something to do with it.
No, that's
just
good.
A little joke. In 2009, I happened on a DVD, which was actually an upload to YouTube by Aaron Franz. And you remember I asked you how to contact him and you had interviewed him?
That's right.
And yeah, it was in his film, The Age of Transitions. He's a very talented guy, in which he brought out the transhumanist agenda, and it was explained as the marriage of man with machine. The godfather of all this, or the primo spokesperson, is Ray Kurzweil, K-U-R-Z-W-E-I-L. And as I watched that, it hit me like a big hammer from heaven or somewhere that, wow, this is what chemtrails are all about. This is why they're embedding these technological components, the fibers, the various kinds of engineered blood cells and whatnot, into people. Because this is the beginning. This is a very sort of micro introduction of technology into biology. I don't know how I figured this out, but I just saw it. It was like a flash of lightning. And I started to talk about it at Conspiracy Con that year. I only had a table. The guy who does Conspiracy Con had never even heard of me. So he offered me a table, and I stood there, and I was explaining to people who came to my table what the real basis of chemtrails might be. And they were floored. They said, oh my God, why aren't you speaking? I said, because he doesn't know who I am. So I was recommended to him subsequently as a speaker. And it was in 2011 that Brian Hall invited me to talk. And thank God there was a bit of lag time, because I was able to assemble more information and gain a far better understanding. And of course, I got to watch documentaries online, like The Transcendent Man, which was made about Ray Kurzweil. And there had been a lot more research done on Morgellons by Clifford Carnicom, and I had also gotten to know people who had Morgellons, and there was a Morgellons research group that had been formed, and I knew some of those people, and in the making of From Chemtrails to Pseudolife Part 1, which is subtitled The Dark Agenda of Synthetic Biology, I was able to get some really, really spectacular micrographs, slides, pictures of what people had found under the microscope. And so I wove my presentation together. The first part of it really concentrates on what are chemtrails, how do they differ from contrails. I took some pictures myself from airplanes through the window, you know, just as a passenger, and you can see this white demarcation line from the air, above which is the inky blue, beautiful sky that we never see from the Earth today, and below which is this white, soupy veil that everybody on Earth lives in. So I showed these kinds of things in the presentation, and I wanted to bring, you know, as much as I could to my audience. But then I wandered into the whole subject of technological, you could even call it insemination, I guess. And that the second half of the presentation is really about Morgellons and its very possible, probable relationship to this transhumanism, which you never hear about. I mean, when you follow the transhumanist movement, it never gets into the underbelly, which is Morgellons. It stays with the, oh, well, don't you want to have Google implanted in your brain so that you won't have to look up anything? You'll just know it. So anyway.
Exactly. I want to talk more about this, of course. There are so many interesting components to the concept of the singularity, what it means, and I want to talk more about some of the excerpts that you had in the presentation as well, specifically than Kurzweil speaking. But let's focus a little bit more on the chemtrails. We had Dane Wigington with us recently here as well. We talked about geoengineering overall, and just that tie-in there is, of course, very interesting of what it is that actually is in the chemical soup that's being sprayed, how that reacts with the environment, how it changes the charge, how that potentially act as a one component in the frequency that we are experiencing as well, when it comes to, you know, Wi-Fi and Gwen towers and all these things that happen. You see this as a one big picture of different components that are acting together to do something. Tell us more about that.
Well, again, I am not one of the designers of chemtrails, and everybody has their own view of what's working with what. But I know that basically in environmental fallout, you will find three different kinds of components today. You'll find metallic salts. You'll find fibers that are not identifiable. They're not natural. There's nothing in any lab database that explains what these are. And then you'll find engineered biologicals. And the way that chemtrails form into cloud masses that are quite stable and can stay in place for a long time, I'm looking at some right now, that has to do with some research that came out of Hebrew University in Jerusalem. The atmospheric scientist Daniel Rosenfeld was the first to point out, and this is all euphemistic, understand, that pollution stops rain, meaning that where you find very, very small particulates that are pollution, basically, man-made, you will not have much rainfall, because the whole concept of condensation is around condensation nuclei. So in nature, little tiny droplets form above the Earth from atmospheric moisture that is drawn to particulates. And those natural particulates would be salt or dust that kind of waft upward with the wind, evaporation, and so forth. And when the droplets get big enough, they will become unstable and they'll fall to the earth as rain. So anyway, the idea that man-made particulates could do something similar is what this research is about. And again, in the mainstream media, they keep it to that. Pollution stops rain. Those were the big headlines. And in that first video, The Dark Agenda of Synthetic Biology, I do get into this, but unfortunately, the person who edited that video left a little inset of me talking right when that comes up. So it obscures the headline that's on the screen for people to read, Pollution Stops Rain. But at any rate, carrying on, all you have to do is turn on 1 watt in your brain, and you say to yourself, wow, well, they must have figured out that if you spray particulates in the air, particularly those that are that have an affinity for water, namely salts, and this is where you get the metallic salts, aluminum oxide, barium oxide, titanium oxide. These oxides are what are known as metallic salts, and they draw water to them. So this is how you get the chem mass up there in the sky. You have sprayed particulates from planes or whatever you want to believe is spraying them, and then you've got the what gloms onto them is the atmospheric moisture. And the finer the particulate, this is the golden rule of making chemtrails, the finer the particulate, the more stable the drop. So when you can engineer minute particulates of these metallic oxides, you will get white haze. And that's basically how it's done.
Like nanoparticles then, maybe. The smaller they are, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting because, well, before we get into some of the things that you showed, what has been found in there in terms of crystals and interesting things like that, what kind of overall impact does this have on our environment then, and where is this leading us? We, again, talked a little bit about this before, that we, you know, the shutdown of the environment, at least in certain areas, it seems to be kind of sporadic. It's a generality, I guess, around the globe, but in certain areas, it's definitely more prevalent than in others. So what impact does this have on the environment?
Well, again, the formation of the artificial cloud masses is only one part of it. Then there's the concentration of the artificial cloud masses into an area where they are destabilized and they pour down in the form of torrents of rain causing floods. Now, I'm going to draw everybody's attention to a YouTube channel that has the secret to this next phase of man-made weather, and it is Weather War 101. So Weather War is one word, Weather War, space 101. Look that up on YouTube and take his instructional tutorial. Scroll down on the channel page to Geoengineering 101. I think it's called, I'm looking for it. I just did a newsletter on it.
Mm-hmm.
And this person has watched the radar maps, okay? They don't give us satellite pictures of weather anymore, if you notice. They give us these graphics, these radar maps. And where you see the swirling cloud vortices, the huge, you know, tornado here and hurricane forming there and whatnot, wherever they actually have a storm, and we've had some giant storms in the last few years, they're all man-made, and at the center of them, you will find a NEXRAD tower. So what is NEXRAD? It's a form of radar. It's the new form of radar. It's Doppler-based. And the two things that Weather War brings us in terms of new knowledge are the fact that these NEXRAD towers are in the very eye of these man-made storms. Hmm. So that's clue number one. And clue number two, which actually goes backward in this unfolding that I'm giving you, is that we have an abundance of power plants all over the world today, not just all over the country. And I had seen these for years. I never knew what they were. I'd be driving along the freeway, and I'd see these tall smokestacks, And I would think to myself, factories. Yeah, those are factories. And they'd be pumping out, belching out huge amounts of what looked like pollution. Huge amounts of gray smoke, white smoke. And I'd think to myself, wow, that is a busy factory. What does it make? And I would think, why aren't people screaming about this ugly stuff that's pouring out of these chimneys? And I found out later from Weather War that those are not factories. They're power plants. And what they are releasing into the atmosphere is millions and millions and millions of gallons of steam. So this is a technology called WSAC, Wet Surface Air Cooler. And it's the operation is known as direct steam condensing for power generation using closed-loop evaporative WSAC technology. So these power plants are using water to create, you know, again, on the surface, electricity, but they're releasing huge, huge quantities of steam into the atmosphere.
Yep.
And this is the source of the water vapor for chemtrails. Now, I was staggered when I learned this. And when you see these things working at night, it's not that there's a night shift going on in factories because it's such a busy industry for whatever they're making. It's because this is the time when people are least likely to notice. And there are areas, if you look at Google Maps and you look for power plants in various cities, you'll see how they're all clustered together. In the Midwest, where they have tons of these storms and chemtrails, you will see sometimes huge power plants within a few blocks of one another. There'll be three or four of them with the tall chimneys. And Weather War wrote me an email in which he said, they tell us to turn off the water while toothbrushing, but meanwhile a water system traverses this country that produces enough vapor to drive a global artificial weather system.
Yep.
Just another spectacular example of the hoodwinking of the human species.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I was going to say they complain on the people who, you know, drive by in their little Nissan or something instead of looking at these factories or, you know, the war industry or what have you. But yeah, definitely carry on.
So this was very new to me that I didn't realize how integrated the chemtrail, you could say, business is into our society. The power plants are evidently doing it, being part of it. Because this is the, you know, the Earth's topography is drying out. So there isn't that much in the way of natural evaporation anymore. And there has to be an artificial source of water for this enormous weather system. And it's evidently coming from these factories, which are not factories, power plants. And this is, I'm still trying to digest all this. But what happens is you get this atmospheric moisture pumped skyward. That mixes with the particulates that are disseminated in the air by, you know, the planes, for lack of a better word. And then they form the cloud masses. And then through Doppler, this NEXRAD system, they mobilize these cloud masses and they push them into areas where they concentrate them, and then they dump them. And then you have a flood, and everybody loses their house, and everybody has to move, and everybody's all freaked out. And so, you know, there is a big research company in England, Aon Benfield Hazard Research Center, and they research global geophysical events. And we're getting bigger and bigger storms, and people are being encouraged to insure themselves against these calamities. So there's a lot of profit-driven motive here, along with, we can get into this later, but the whole concept of population control.
Right. Now, so how coordinated would you say that this is at this stage? Very difficult to know, of course, but in terms of weather warfare activity, driving people off certain areas of land. I mean, we could kind of see this with the Katrina many years ago now, but Is it on that kind of level, or is this just experimentation at this stage, do you think? That's, and they pick whatever random places and sites.
Well, I heard just last week from somebody that, who was it? I'm trying to think. Warren Buffett, she said. Now, again, this is just what somebody told me, has bought up all these flooded areas in these Midwestern states.
Right.
So
pushing people off the land and then buying it up.
Right.
Cheap. Yeah.
And I think that this is going to play into the earth-backed currency that they'll introduce. I don't know if they'll call it the Terra, you know.
Right.
And the new currency will have something to do with the backing of the earth and land. And people will go, oh, yeah, the planet, that's the best thing that could back our currency. We want to use that currency. We don't want to use silver or gold. Who cares about silver or gold? So I think that this is the whole plan, is to start getting people moved off their, you know, where they've lived, cities. They might even take out cities altogether and just have these zones, these populated zones at some point.
Yeah, it seems like the mega hubs are popular places for congestments of humans, though, to give the appearance that, you know, in that regard, that we are overpopulated and just keeping, just the idea of keeping everyone in one spot for easy control and access and regulation through electronics and frequency and food and everything else is kind of related to that. But you might be right. You might be right.
Right. I mean, population dislocation, population concentration, which comes from the dislocation, and then that allows you to much more easily broadcast your trends to those people. Then they lose touch with the environment. I mean, people, you know, by the year 2000, 80% of Americans had already moved to within an hour's drive of the coast. And that's primarily because they gutted agriculture. They brought in the ConAgra and all the big, huge farming operations, and the little towns that had cropped up all over America in the past, they just had dried out. There was no reason to be there. So people drifted toward the seacoast, where many of the cities are, because that's where cities were originally built, along rivers and coasts, and they found work there. They did the best they could. So that was already a population dislocation and concentration. And then people who live on the coasts, they don't have any relationship with the land anymore, really, because everything is so populated. This is how you can concentrate Wi-Fi. You know, we're in urban centers, and you can concentrate wireless technologies there too, and you can radiate everybody.
Exactly. Yeah, that's just the idea there. And I think that this has an interesting spin then, in terms of what you've kind of weaved together, that we have a nanoparticular or nanotechnology on top of this. So, you looked at some of the people that have examined their water samples, for example, from puddles to rainwater. People have looked at this in microscopes, found weird crystalline shapes with fibers coming out of it, kind of looking like some of the Morgellons pictures and everything else. What is that stuff?
Henrik, beats me. I mean, I did make a pyramid. I don't know which presentation it was in. I think it was in the first one, the nanotech pyramid, where I said that people had, I'm looking for it now, you start with materials, raw materials, and then they form structures, and those structures assemble into devices. All this has to do with piezoelectricity. Are you familiar with that term? I did mention it.
Yeah, I am, actually. There's been some of the theories of how earth lights and earthquake lights and other things are created as well, that you have pressure or compression actually in a certain area, then you get an electrical effect of that. But break it down for us. Maybe you can do that better than I.
Well, piezoelectricity is the concept of, it's a kind of electricity without wires. When you apply a frequency to a crystalline form, a crystal, you will generate a voltage, and vice versa. When you apply a voltage to a crystal, you will generate a frequency. So the body is already piezoelectric. That is part of the body's own nanotechnology. We have crystalline piezoelectric elements in our bones. It's in our proteins. I mean, it's all over the place. But the nanotech pyramid that I referred to starts with materials, and then those are the raw elements, let's say. Then those form into structures, and then there are certain processes that are implemented by the structures, or the structures can generate, and then those create devices. So I think this keeps tumbling upward and upward and upward. The devices then become raw materials for structures and processes and more devices that are more complicated. And you get to the point in certain of these Morgellons, let's just call them sufferers, they are generating pseudo life forms or even life forms. I know a woman who routinely has bugs and weird kind of little embryonic seahorse type things issuing from her lesions, which in her case are humongous. They're like craters on her body. And she doesn't need super microscopic power to look at the stuff that's coming out of her. But not everyone is issuing bugs and whatnot. A lot of the people who suffer from Morgellons, if they pick at their lesions, and they could have anywhere from, you know, numerous lesions to just a couple that remain, there will always seem to be one lesion that stays open, a handful of them that continue to be active. They're almost like volcanoes. They erupt. They produce stuff. And some of these people are coming up with a lot of the material that the, I don't know what to call it, the devices that come out of people, it's made of silica. So silica is a quartz form, and people are issuing these things that have colored dots on them. And when Jan Smith looked into it, she's a very bright woman who has the website MorgellonsExposed.com, she found that the plaques, the silica plaques that were coming out of the few lesions she has left, they are colored. They have these colored dots, which are part of the whole nanotech, toolbox. And I'm looking for my little slide here, but it's in the presentation. It's the nanotechnology dyes are used, the colored dots to mark different things when they work with nanotechnology. Should I just explain that nano is one, I believe it's 1/1,000,000th of a meter. So anything under that size is in that nanotech parameter.
Yeah.
And we have, of course, nanobiotech now, which is the,
actually, sorry, but 1 nanometer is actually 1/1,000,000th of a meter. So it's really super tiny.
Oh, sorry. Is it billionth? You see, it's been a while.
No worries. Just so people get an idea of that, how small it is.
Then it would be, a 1/1,000,000th of a centimeter or something?
Yeah, something like that. I think you're right.
Yeah. So just to give people an idea of scale, I think these numbers are going to be right. A red blood cell is 7 microns. So a micron is, nano is under 1 micron.
Right. Yeah.
So a micron, a red blood cell is 7 to 8 microns, and a human hair is about 80 microns. So this is how small nano is. And a lot of people throw the term nano around. They say there's nanomaterial in the chemtrails. And I know that Clifford Carnicom says in his research that he has not found anything on the nano scale in the cultures that he's made. But I think what's happening to make the things that he sees in his petri dishes, that is going on the nano scale.
Well, you would need something to view that with as well. You need you can't view it, I think, with any kind of microscope. I think it's a different technology, if I perceive that correct, or maybe that's changed in the last few years.
No, I think you need an electron microscope.
Right.
No one's even seen an electron, but you need a very powerful microscope that most people can't afford. You know, only the labs have it.
Exactly. So the point there being, there could be stuff in it. It's just that no one has been able to find it.
Yes.
Or see it, rather.
So we're in the realm of synthetic biology. And you know, that was Dr. Frankenstein and his monster.
Well, exactly. We have a classic idea out of, sci-fi, if you will, of gray goo, the hypothetical idea that molecular nanotechnology, little self-replicating robots basically will consume all matter on Earth and then just basically have an instruction of building more of themselves. This is literally, you could reshift all the molecular matter in a different, combination and ergo create new things. And I mean, this is even something that Kurzweil talked about in one of the excerpts. And I've listened to a lot of his stuff and things like that. And it's quite open about that, the way it will be introduced or invaded, I guess, to a certain degree, into all living things, all things on the planet, into your body, into your bloodstream, into your system. I mean, where will that lead us? And how far are they, do you think, in that experimentation? Is that what we're seeing already? An initial test of this type of technology, but they're not telling anybody about it?
Henrik, Ray Kurzweil talks about the GNR explosion, genetics, nanotechnology, and robotics, GNR. And it's anyone's guess how far advanced that is. What people see in labs, in the university labs, that's one thing. Those are the people who are in the science community, but they are lay people for all intents and purposes. And they're very compartmentalized. They could work on a mouse gene for 10 years, and they wouldn't know who is waiting above them, drooling for the results of their research and how that's going to be integrated into something else. So the actual integration seems like we're seeing it in some of these Morgellons people whose bodies are living laboratories and who. I mean, a lot of these people report that the materials that their bodies are issuing are actually stamped. They're stamped with initials or symbols or letters. One guy told me, and I don't think these people are making it up because I do know these people. I've spent time with them physically, the people that I'm quoting here and there. But he said that he had a lotus flower on his scalp that. If you put a black light, a person who was treating him for Morgellons had the idea of putting a black light on his head, and my God, this lotus flower design lit up on his scalp through his hair. And so he's marked, And then they also talk about the Morgellons people, how the nano in them, they call it the nano in me. Communicates with the nano that's somewhere else. They'll walk by a place or another person and they'll feel all this activity and buzzing. And many people who have Morgellons can feel that it's an intelligence in them. This is how they refer to it. And I've had this come from total strangers. There was a woman in the post office once and I was online and, it's California, so people have on t-shirts and whatnot. And she had all these red splotches on her arms, and she noticed me looking at them because I'm very curious. And when I see this, I can't help looking and trying to figure out what it is. And she said, "Oh, yes, I have this terrible rash." And I said, "Really?" She was willing to talk about it. And she said, "Yes, and my dermatologist, you should see, he has to tweeze these fibers out of it." So I said to her, "Could you meet me outside when we're done?" And she said, "Sure." So I met her outside. I said, "Do you know what Morgellons is?" And she said, "Well, I've kind of heard of it." And she told me, she said, "Whatever this is, it's alive in me. I can feel it. It's moving around. It's like trying to talk to me." And she wasn't disturbed by it. That's the other thing. I guess you get to a point where you can't leave it and it can't leave you. So, you have to live with it. But they all say it's alive.
Wow. Well, if that is the case, then it has to be something on that level or on that scale that's using the components of the body to hook up into it. And I mean, it might even be something that's replicating within the body. I mean, is there any idea of why it's kind of seeking its way outward from your body and creating like these little fibers that are sticking out? Maybe this is a mistake.
Well, again, that could be anyone's guess, but the one person I know quite well who has the largest forms that anyone knows of, I mean, there could be other people that we just don't know about, but she says that these bugs will come running out of her. I mean, I could tell you the details, and I will, because people need to know this. But she spends a huge amount of time in the bathroom every night just digging at this stuff because it wants to come out. I mean, it's almost like a birth process. And she can feel the pressure building inside these cavernous lesions that she has. She's got a number of cavernous lesions, and I mean big, like at times they get to be 11 inches across, you know? And one thing that happens to the, let's just say, the Super Morgellons people is they become enormous in physical size. They put on a couple hundred pounds, and it almost seems to me that they've added another body. There's an adipose layer of fat that is effectively, it's like the bath in which all this is happening. And so the people who have Morgellons usually do gain quite a bit of weight, and it's in that padding that the channels are formed. And I don't know how graphic you want me to get,
Well,
but
we could talk about it all. I mean, it's let's try to examine and understand what it is. So go ahead.
well, there is a crust that forms on the lesions, as I've learned. And this crust, if you allow it to harden, the lesion becomes more contained, and that's not preferable. You want to wear down the crust. So the crust is something that you actually have to physically dig at. And this is where you get this idea from psychiatrists and dermatologists and allopathic hospital types that the people are doing it to themselves, that they're self-excoriating and they're nuts, you know? But the fact is that this other life form inside you, it wants expression, it wants to come out. So the people who have this have told me that if they can wear down this external, this rim, it's like a crater rim on a volcano. If they can wear that down every day, then they can pull out all this biofilm. Talk about gray goo. There's a biofilm that is the, it's almost like embryonic fluid in the womb. The fluid. There's another word for it, but anyway. So the biofilm. They
Amniotic
want
waters or something like that.
amniotic fluid. Sorry. They want to pull that out, pull that out, pull that out. And so as I've listened to this, and I've spent years on the phone with some of these people, it has occurred to me that what we've got are actual wombs within these lesions, WOMBS, like uterus womb. And you've got a channel going down, which is almost vaginal in its design. And the womb is developing different forms that it issues periodically, and they can be spiders and insects. So people have gotten twigs and leaves. And I've been told that when the insects come out, they have eyes and they look at you like, please let me live. I want to live too. And the one woman I have spoken to a lot is terrified of bugs and spiders. And can you imagine it being having a phobia of bugs and then having to pull them out of you every night?
Oof. Nope.
Yeah. So the amount of the blood is synthetic. The blood is very gooey. It doesn't run. It kind of just gloms, you know. And there's so much. It's a massive amount of stuff that you've got to yank out of yourself every day. And she spends hours in the bathroom, hours working on this.
So where's the building material comes from? Is that for the reasons why they get more weight put on, so that they have, some material to go on here?
Possibly it could be that the nanobiotech is self-replicating itself. And that the body just gives it the piezoelectricity or the, I don't know how it really works.
Right. Well, why do you think only some people, as it seems then, are infected, if that is the correct term, or get stuck with this?
Well, in the case of some people I know who have it, this is where it gets very conspiratorial. They, as children, lived, you know, at these military bases, and they were taken to military hospitals, naval dispensaries, on a regular basis. And, you know, one person told me that she was taken by her mother to the military hospital 3 times a week for several years, starting when she was very young, I guess anywhere from like 5 to 7 or 8. And I said, well, do you remember what happened to you there? And she said, no, not really. She said her mother used to wait outside on a, you know, chair, and she would be taken inside with the doctors. And all she can remember is that she was being treated for a nervous stomach and weak wrists.
Hmm.
So that is something. A nervous stomach, I mean, it's obviously made up, but this is what she does remember. And she has a very advanced case of this Morgellons now. And then another woman who had it told me that she used to get injected all the time with stuff. I think she lived on Guam or one of the islands. Her father was in the military, and her mother used to drag her over to the military hospital all the time, and she'd get all these vaccines. And she said that when she was 7, she remembers biting a doctor because she did not want the needle again.
Wow.
And she has not only profound chemical sensitivities, but she also has Morgellons.
So this might not be then something that derives or connects in that way with the chemtrails, but something that has been injected into these people at an earlier stage, and now this is kind of having a life of its own, and this is this could be a medical experiment for. I mean, people have to think about this. Look at the biochemical, you know, warfare tests and everything else that's been done throughout the, you know, hundreds of years in human history. Once we, you know, got meddling with this stuff, and the way that governments and states have been militaries have been testing on their own people, you know, releasing gas, you know, in the subway systems, they're injecting people with this and that, you know, it's just, this is common stuff, you know, this is like not out of the blue, and this might just be a new type of bacteria or a new type of nanotechnological robotic, you know, device basically that's been injected into people so that they will just see what happens, right?
Exactly. And given they probably knew back then that there would be mass communication, this internet web kind of a thing going on in our time. So it's not hard to find these people. You know, all you have to do is probe the chat rooms and forums that have to do with Morgellons, and people are reporting everything. They'll show pictures, they'll show, you know, tell the details of what's happening to them. They have their own websites.
Yep, indeed. Let's just talk a little bit more about this here, Sophia, in terms of where this connects then with the bigger picture of where you see this going, and the play in with the singularity, the arise of an artificial intelligence, overall just where the human machine civilization kind of is leading us down, and how human beings are being literally transformed before our very eyes, and that this is where we're in the initial steps of this now. This is not 45 or 29, that, you know, that these numbers that are flying around by Kurzweil and this other Russian guy, but something that's beginning to be tested upon right now. And it plays right into where we are at with the technology, just as you mentioned, in bathing in the frequencies that this interacts with it. You have the chemtrails on one side of it, kind of helping to charge the, changing the polarity, I believe, of the atmosphere, etc. Where is this going?
Well, I came across the term homo evolutus, and I think that's part of the whole transhuman agenda, that they will create the post-human, and the post-human won't be homo sapien. The post-human will be homo evolutus, E-V-O-L-U-T-I-S, homo evolutus. And Carnicom has found that these materials that he's able to culture in his own private little makeshift lab are self-replicating, and they also contain, they are they have the properties of the three kingdoms of life, not just the one that we are. We are eukaryotes, and we are not archaea, and we are not bacteria. And all the different life forms have different kinds of properties and tolerances. For instance, bacteria cannot take high heat, and they cannot take harsh chemicals. That's why you use bleach, and you boil, food, water, and you will take out the microbes that way. But the archaea can take all that. And eukaryotes have cell walls that have, they have cells that have a nucleus and a cytoplasm and a cell wall as well. So this kind of life form is, it's unto itself. And that's how it's always been. But today we have stuff growing in us that Carnicom has cultured from the tissues of normal people as well as people who have Morgellons. And people have cultured these from animals and, it's in everything. We have these mixed properties. They cross the spectrum of all the life kingdoms. So we cannot be defined as eukaryotic Homo sapiens anymore. We're something else already. And that suggests that we're moving to this Homo evolutus form. And we are already post-humans. I call it the transhuman corridor. We are on the way out of Homo sapien.
Yeah, it's very disconcerting in the way that this is debated upon as well, which is basically that progress, as they call it then, is something that... It's going to occur. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. It's not a choice. It's not something that's going to be debated or voted on. This is just something that's going to be invented, put into practice and use, and then it's just a matter of if you are going to be part of that or not. And the way that they expressed it in one of the clips from the documentary there that you showed is basically, if you're not on board of that train, you're going to be left behind, and you're going to die out, and that's going to be it, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're all, to use a term that's a little bit of a stretch, infected with this change, and there's not much we can do to resist it. We can not have a cell phone, or we can not ride the bus, or we can, be barefoot. We can be as primitive and basic as we choose, but what's happening in our biology is beyond our control, because we're all sharing the air and we're all, living in the radiation bath. Even the two kinds of radiation, ionizing and non-ionizing, wireless, for instance, is non-ionizing, non-thermal, and the fallout from nuclear events and nuclear testing is called ionizing thermal radiation. But all of this has blown all over the planet now, the thermal radiation. And we've got the wireless culture. And I just want to call people's attention to an incredible blog. I just met the person who runs this blog. His name is Joe Imbriano, and he's from Fullerton, California, where they have the most aggressive Wi-Fi in the schools program. This is going to be the standard setter for all of America. And he's a chemist by training, but that's not what he does, although he's kept up with chemistry. And he has a very, very agile, very brilliant mind. And he was the one who really framed it for me when he pointed out that this Wi-Fi, giving all the children iPads and Wi-Fi stations at their schools, and encouraging them to learn from online textbooks, this is a sterilization program, he said. And we all know that, wireless radiation lowers testosterone and kills sperm.
Yep.
And it also greatly impairs the sperm's motility and volume. But what I didn't realize was what it does to the eggs, and he explained it to me. He said that upon penetration... in the act of conception, the first thing the egg does when it's penetrated by the sperm is it hardens its exterior. Boom! It makes a hard barrier. It does not want further penetration. It doesn't want all this mixture of genetics. It wants to be penetrated once, and that's it.
Yeah, so no foreign materials and everything else comes in there, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And then, so what happens is with wireless radiation, like picture a little girl sitting with a little, toy in her lap, or even a baby, and they now give them these iPhones that make mommy's voice. The eggs are being radiated, and radiation is a force. Radiation is not just a squiggle on somebody's chart somewhere in a textbook. It is a force. It is a three-dimensional wave that's coming, and it's oscillating at billions of times a second. Wi-Fi is 2.4 gigahertz, 2.4 billion hertz cycles per second. So the eggs are being bombarded with this force, and what do? They harden. They harden their exteriors such that the only way they can be penetrated is by a needle in a lab. Get it?
IVF, yeah.
Yep.
So that's very interesting. We have a reverse effect on, for example, the blood-brain barrier, which completely opens up during these frequencies, letting in heavy metals, carrying things with it into your brain as well.
Yes.
I mean, this is just we've talked about this so many times now, but this is a suicide program. But just let's talk. Before we take a break out, let's just talk a little bit about this idea that this is done as an ongoing plot, if you will, to make the human beings sterile, to make them dependent on a biomedical industry that's on the rise right now, to take over all these processes and roles. We might be looking at a future where we basically have to have some kind of treatment just to be able to be in the environment, if that means permanent injections or radiated with something else. Of course, this is going to lead to an avalanche of different diseases eventually, which is the very reason why it might fail, and we'll get to that later. But what about the idea that this is done consciously so that the very natural processes of how human life is created and sustained can be put into the hands of those people who want to run and take over the basic processes of nature and earth?
Right, and that, Henrik, is the New World Order. That's the definition. It's a new world order on the subcellular component level of everything. And when it's invaded with intelligence, artificial intelligence, that marriage, that singularity will occur. And the idea of reproduction is going to be something that you'll have to qualify for if you can survive the onslaught to get to that point at all, So the whole idea of being supervised by the state, you'll have to be licensed in order to parent, you'll have constant supervision. But this is all radiation biology. And the attempt, in my humble opinion, is to cultivate from amongst us all those specimens that can endure, that have adapted by whatever fluke or mechanism, survival mechanism, that have developed a tolerance for all of what is happening or as much of what is happening as is possible. Now, back in the 50s, at the Weizmann Institute in Rehoboth, Israel, they cataloged Deinococcus radiodurans. This is a bacterial form that gobbles up radioactive waste. It was formed by radiating canned food in the experiment to sterilize it, and they found that what happened as a result of doing that was that there was this new bacterial form with a toroidal DNA, not a strand DNA. So because the DNA was in a circular ring, it was tougher. It didn't break apart. So Deinococcus radiodurans has a very tough kind of DNA structure, and it loves radiation. It thrives in radiation. And I believe that what they're looking for is a human, and in all the species, forms that will be able to take this radiation. And that's what the culling is about. The culling is a selective process.
Okay, let's take a break right here, and then we'll pick this up right after the break. I want to ask you much more about this, of course, because this is creepy, scary, and of course, weirdly fascinating at the same time in terms of how conscious this effort might actually be, and what this will lead to in the future. You know, who will get to be there, and how do they select this? We'll get into this later, but let's talk a little bit about your website here before we take a break. Sophia, give us out the details. I'm going to have the lectures linked up as well, by the way. That's on YouTube on our program page here. So for people who haven't seen that yet, just check on the program page and you can view those right there. I highly recommend it. But you also have DVD versions of these available. Tell us about those.
Right. The store website is called Avatar Products, AVATAR, avatarproducts.com. And my information site is aboutthesky.com. And guess what I did this morning? I actually posted some of my newsletters on the newsletter page, which is in the left margin, and I'm going to start putting up a lot more of them. I've been into this newsletter for now, this is the fourth year, I think, and that's where I put most of my energy. The website, I add to it now and then, aboutthesky.com, but go to that newsletter tab, and I promise that I will continue to upload newsletters as fast as I can from previous years. And they go through a range of subjects, and I think that you will find them interesting. So, aboutthesky.com.
Very good. We'll have that link up, and also avatarproducts.com. A lot of other things there for you as well, so you can check that out. Okay, Sophia, we'll take a short break here. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this.